and welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician and herbalist, and we're really excited to have you on for a great program where we discuss health, wellness, and issues in alternative medicine today. And I think we have our other co-host, the natural nurse, online.
Hey, Dr. Zamperone. Yes, of course, many of our listeners who listen all the time, and we have over 300,000 people who pick up our podcast, it's pretty exciting, know that you have been hosting the last few weeks, which was wonderful. We take turns. We're in this together. And we'll talk about some specific topics, but I thought we should take the opportunity to, you know, reintroduce ourselves and who we are as practitioners and health providers. So I thought I would do a little of my bio, you do a little of your bio.
Sure.
Then let's talk about all the classes, workshops, lectures, and exciting events that we offer, such as trips to Jamaica and trips to Chinatown. And then we'll talk about, you know, a specific topic. For instance, you just published a magnificent article on the successful application, and I'll just say California poppy, since not too many people are probably familiar with the genus and species of that plant, to combat opioid addiction, which is certainly a very hot topic right now. Yeah. So how does that sound to you as a show outline?
Sounds great. And then we could also mention our new book, Supplements for Pain, which is available. Talk, and that, you know, the talking about the opioid addiction could segue us into talking about pain if we have time.
Sounds great. So let me introduce myself to our listeners. Of course, they've been listening to us for many, many years. And I'm Ellen Kamai, PhD, RN, American Herbalist Guild Registered Herbalist. I'm also on the council, the governing council of the American Herbalist Guild, and I am a holistic nurse. That is a national certification as a holistic nurse. I'm known as the Natural Nurse. You can find me at naturalnurse.com, and I've been doing natural medicine since 1973. I'm also a medical school instructor, and I teach botanical pharmacology and other courses, and I teach a lot online and as well as on ground, both with Dr. Z and on my own, with herbal certification programs where people can get their American Herbalist Guild registered herbalist degree. That's a big thing of what I do because so many people are interested in doing natural medicine. I have a class coming up called Career Paths in Natural Medicine, and that's online in a couple of weeks. You can find all that at naturalnurse.com calendar. And we lead echo tours for cures to indigenous areas of the world. I'll let Dr. Z talk about that. And so we have many, many books. I also do radionics and dowsing for those people who like to learn that. And basically, I'm involved with taking care of myself, my family, and teaching education both to professionals and consumers about how to care for themselves and their families naturally.
Well, that was awesome. Great. Nice to hear that again.
Remember, right?
We never really talk about ourselves. It's kind of interesting. But, yeah, so I'm affectionately known as Dr. Z. But my real name is Eugene Zampirone. My dad's from Venice. Zampirone is a Venetian name, by the way, which I had an opportunity to go visit 2 years ago for the first time. It was great. Loved Italy. I'm a naturopathic physician, and I've been practicing since 1990 as a naturopathic physician. And besides having a private practice and also working with the natural nurse since 1990. We've been business partners since then, doing radio, television, writing, lectures, webinars, articles, you name it, developing products. I'm also one of the founders of the first accredited naturopathic school on the East Coast, the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, which is a fully accredited 4-year doctoral program leading to, if you pass the boards, licensure in one of 28 states now. that license naturopathic physicians mostly as primary care doctors. Other states have other licenses where we're basically specialists of specializing in natural medicine. All naturopathic physicians have to pass rigorous national testing. We're actually one of the only practitioners, besides like maybe an Oriental medical doctor or a TCM doctor, that actually have herbal medicine on our national boards. A lot of people take, you know, study herbs and things like that, but they don't have to pass a national board exam. We do. So that gives us a level of, I think, expertise. And I teach many courses in the program, including like history of medicine. And I also teach rheumatology and courses on autoimmune disease and things like that. I also teach men's health because I've been kind of working with men's health, including andropause and those types of conditions, alternatives to prostate issues for many years. And, and I teach other, and then I also see patients at the University of Bridgeport Clinic, which is a renowned clinic, which offers chiropractic, acupuncture, dental hygiene, physician's assistant program. It's a really holistic hub. The University of Bridgeport has become one of the holistic hubs in the Northeast, and a lot of people don't even know about it. And a very affordable clinic for those folks that want to avail themselves of natural medicine, but maybe their insurance doesn't cover it or something like that, and you get really good care there. So that's a little bit about, and you know, I also teach a lot of botanical medicine courses like the natural nurse, like a botanical pharmacy course and advanced case studies in botanical medicine called Botanical Medicine 3. I was just working on some of my case studies, and that's one reason why I ended up publishing that article, Ellen, and I decided to just write it up because I had to write it up anyway for class, so I might as well publish it too. So that's a little bit about us, the hosts of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Well, that's good. And now let's talk about the many on-ground exciting events that we host that our listeners can actually join with us on ground, which means you come there physically, you know, one of those new terms, on ground. So, for instance, we have a Chinatown walk coming up very, very soon, and we're actually taking registration for that right now.
Right. For those who kind of live in this, you know, area, neck of the woods, and would like to join us, you can learn so much about traditional Chinese medicine, even in one day, from being immersed in the culture, in the antiquity, in the philosophy, and in the practicality of this ancient system of medicine, which still survives and thrives today. It's a system of medicine which is a complete system. In other words, it avails itself of mind-body practices, diet practices, lifestyle practices, of course, acupuncture, physical medicine, such as specific types of bone setting and deep tissue work like Tuina, and, of course, acupuncture. Our interest is, of course, herbal medicine. We've been studying Chinese medicine and herbal formulas for a really long time. I took lots of courses in Chinese medicine when I was out at Bastyr University and also the Northwest School of Oriental Medicine, NIOM. So I took a lot out in Seattle and applied that knowledge here. So, you know, we learn a lot about, on our trip, we learn about Qigong. We learn about where Chinese medicine evolved into a very interesting system of medicine. And a lot of people have been to Chinatown, maybe walking down Canal Street, really close to Little Italy, but maybe they never actually stepped inside and spoke to some of the Chinese doctors in the apothecaries there. Or maybe they were just intimidated, but they were yet interested and fascinated by all the interesting herbs they see in jars and exotic medicines. And so this is an opportunity to join us and immerse yourself in this. Any words on the Chinatown trip?
Well, it's so much fun, and it's so much fun, Dr. Z, you know, just fun. I mean, where else can you go underground in Chinatown to experience how they make Chinese medicine? And it's actually an underground FDA-registered laboratory. How fascinating.
Yes, kind of in the bowels of Chinatown in a way. It's so interesting to see that. And how Chinese herbs and philosophy looks at balancing the qi, the yin, the yang, builds up energy used for the true, one of the original medicines on the planet, that's for sure, since antiquity, and something that, you know, is designed to even go along with Western medicine, too, if you're on certain medications and things like that. You can still avail yourselves of some of the herbs and acupuncture and things to kind of stay younger and healthy through as we get older. You know, these are all the things that the Chinese studied, how to stay well. And it was actually considered a real bad thing if the doctor allowed his patient to get sick. So there was an onus on the physician to really stay after the patient and promote wellness-type activities, thought processes, diet, lifestyle. And that's very interesting because in our system of medicine, really you tend to go to the doctor when you're sick, you know, and it's really more of a sickness-based system and not a preventive wellness system. You know,
That's so true.
Right?
So if anyone's interested in joining us, just go to naturalnurse.com. And if you look at the lower right hand of the page, there's actually pictures about our Chinatown trip, as well as a little audio with beautiful Asian music in the background, and tells you how to register. And we are taking registrations right now for the Chinatown trip. If you go to naturalnurse.com, go along the top to calendar, click on that, you'll see the many other classes we are also giving, because we also have the Gilberti's workshop coming up, Dr. Z. And you can check with Carrie if she is, in fact, promoting that. And that is where we go out in the field and we gather wild, edible, and medicinal wild plants and cultivated plants and actually make medicine. And we had a lot of people show up for the one we just did on Long Island as well.
Yeah, that's so much fun to learn the difference between how the applications of herbal medicine and the strengths, and learning which plants grow in your local area to be used as medicine, proper ways to dry things and to actually make them into usable substances, usable medicaments for, you know, everything from relaxation to colds and flus to coughs. A renowned cough syrup. I remember one lady, she just kind of called me out of the blue and said, I came to your workshop 15 years ago and made a big bottle of cough syrup, and it was the only thing that worked, and which is really true because it's got lots of horehound and other interesting blends of herbs, perilla, and things that most people don't use, elecampane. And she's like, do you have a bottle? And I said, oh, I just finished mine, so... See, I don't know if she ever came back to our workshop, but that's an example of someone that really benefited from making these tinctures.
So, oh, yeah. There's so many people who have those stories. And then you can learn to make your own at your home, which is part of your traditional right. Everyone, if they look a little bit back in their background, not that far, maybe one or two generations back, had someone who used herbal medicine for home remedies. It's a very recently lost art. And I will say one that I'm promoting to bring back to everybody. So everyone should know how to deal with life's little challenges, colds and flus, aches and pains, with folkloric natural remedies, which were used very successfully and very cost effectively for thousands of years until they were purposefully and politically wiped out which we also have the story of how that happened in our book, The Natural Medicine Chest. And of course, we have so many books available, Dr. Z, that, you know, that's another good thing to talk about. We have an excellent book called The Natural Medicine Chest. We have one called Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. And we have a small ebook, as well as you can get it in a hard copy, which is called Supplements for Pain. That's sort of a shorter version than the arthritis book. And that one, by the way, Dr. Z, if you go to naturalnurse.com and click on products and then books, we have those books, the ebooks, available for, you know, just really like a few pennies, I mean very little, and you can download it right away, or you can get it as a hard copy. There's a link to go to Amazon if you prefer. So there's so much information that we have available. Let's talk about the Jamaica trip, Dr. Z. I don't know if you've given me the new dates.
Wow, yeah, we have to get all that organized real
That's
soon.
A reminder, because right away we'll put the new dates. I know it will be in probably March of 2019.
Yes.
And it's time to get those dates up there.
And, you know, if you like immersing yourself in a beautiful tropical place and learning from indigenous healers and experiencing, you know, a place that's fairly close. I mean, the plane ride from New York, for instance, is only about a little over three hours, so it's not like it's very far. But we take interested people into very remote places in Jamaica to learn about the tropical medicine and ethnobotany, which is the study of how people have used plants for food, medicine, shelter, spiritual reasons, etc. And so you'll experience this firsthand, including the an amazing tropical cuisine and lectures, hikes, beautiful hikes into pristine rainforest areas. Now, this is the only area of Jamaica that's really one of the only areas that's really untouched by tourism. It is the only area that's untouched by tourism on the coast of Jamaica. So this is like a special sanctuary, this area that we go to. It's in St. Mary Parish. And so it's really almost, you know, the way that, for instance, some of the maybe Vikings or Columbus or other people probably saw Jamaica when they came to the West Indies. And so it's a real special place for me. I studied for many years with a Jamaican shaman, bush doctor, who passed away a couple years ago, crossed over to the ancestors. And he really has been one of my almost father figures in teaching me about herbal medicine. His name was Jamba of the Maroons. He was a Maroon. And you'll get a chance to study with some of his students and learn about so many things that we can use for medicine. You might say, oh, Jamaica medicine, what do we need to know about that? But there's so many applications. Turmeric, ginger, you'll see it growing in the wild, and we'll use it for things. Jamaican dogwood, one of the most interesting plants for pain that's been discovered and used by the not only the Jamaicans, but by the doctors, medical doctors, at the turn of the last century that were called the eclectics. They were the ones that began to use these things when they would want to use opium for, like, the pain of a broken bone or the nagging pain of a toothache or backache or nagging pain of a migraine, facial pain, you know, these serious pains. So you'd want to use opium, but it wouldn't be tolerated by the patient. So they would use this Jamaican dogwood, both topically as a poultice, so you'll learn about how to make poultices and things. So the Jamaica trip's great, and plus we have a lot of time to have fun and big fires at the beach and drumming, and it's a real immersion into Jamaican reggae culture and medicine.
Well, you did bring up opium, Dr. Z, so I think That was our segue. We'll break in about 5 minutes to listen to a recording of a Natural Medicine Chest, but let's talk about where we're going to go with this. You just had a case study published, and we have so much published, and this is in the International Journal of Complementary and Alternative Medicine. What made you decide to put this case study in the MedCrave Journal?
Well, I've always talked about this interesting couple cases that I've had, and many more. I just these were fascinating, and I think with hearing the news about the opioid crisis, it just spurred me to do this. Plus, I kind of had to do it for school as well. So it was a kind of a coming together of all those forces and opportunities to publish this. So I went ahead and went through the charts and pulled together some of the information about, and again, it was all, you know, stumbled upon by reading and staying, trying to be current with natural medicine journals and things like that. And should I talk about the case of the woman?
Yes, absolutely. Now, the name of this article, it's about California poppy, but California poppy has a kind of difficult to pronounce Jennison species name. I wonder where it got that.
I think it was from one of the discoverers of, or Western people that they named it after. So it's Eschscholzia.
Oh, okay.
Eschscholzia. Eschscholzia californica.
And so the name of Dr. Z's article is Successful Application of Eschscholzia californica to Combat Opioid Addiction.
Yeah, this is a case. You know, sometimes doctors like to present cases of how they've managed things. You know, many of the old herbal books were written like that. If you read the old, some of the older journals from the eclectic doctors, from what's called the physiomedicalists, these are all physicians at the turn of the last century, early 1900s and things. And then, you know, modern days, people like to read case studies. Sometimes you see a good case study in JAMA and some of the mainstream articles, too. So, you know, it's subjective, but it's interesting to nonetheless. So I decided to do this case study because, again, one of the my charges in teaching this advanced botanical medicine is to really teach the students how to apply the medicine in a case study. Because, you know, it's great to learn about herbs and, you know, see them and understand them and learn their chemistry and their name and their pharmacologic principles, but then you might not be able to apply them properly in a case, and that's really, you know, what a good clinician is trained to do, is to understand the need for the particular botanical, the interactions with other medications, the you know, and that information can be then hopefully taught, although it's somewhat a maturity thing, I think, for young practitioners. They kind of grow into that type of stuff as they get
more seasoned. Well,
definitely
experience helps. But in this topic, 115 people at least are documented to die daily due to being addicted to opioids. That's staggering.
That was you know, right out of some national statistics from some very reliable sources. I looked around to try to get a good number of how many people really die of this, and kind of needlessly, of course, you know. I mean, because, you know, a lot of this has to do with what, you know, I call the politics of the pharmaceutical industry. I didn't talk about this in the article, but I kind of wanted to maybe on our show, that, you know, a lot of the drug companies, you know, burn the doctors to prescribe, overprescribe these opioids, and at what a cost to society we're seeing. So I have some other statistics about the cost of society, and so, you know, I was wondering, well, is there anything we can do about this besides the cops and EMS workers carrying around Narcan to jumpstart people's hearts if they have an opioid addiction? or, you know, the kind of conventional clinics and methadone clinics and other ways for people to get off of these things. And so, you know, I started looking at the herbal research to see if there were any herbs that would help with that. And, of course, there's a lot. There's a lot of information on, you know, kratom, for instance, which I didn't talk about in a case study.
Oh, I never heard it pronounced that way, Dr. Z. Kratom.
How do you say
it? I always call it kratom.
Kratom.
I don't know. Maybe
you
it's
say
kratom.
Tomato,
that's
I say tomato.
I have never heard that. Did you hear that somewhere?
Yeah, from somebody.
Oh, okay.
But anyway.
It's probably right,
yeah.
But you know that I actually tried that myself. I went around last year and I found some and tried just a quarter of a teaspoon powdered leaf, unprocessed, in tea, and it was amazingly powerful. And shortly thereafter, you know, the FDA has outlawed it.
Yeah, I don't really know the current. You know, I try to follow that on the ABC, the Herbalgram Journal. What's going on with that? I think it's kind of in a never land, but, you know, but nonetheless, that's one thing that potentially could be used to bind to the various opioid receptors, particularly the mu opioid receptor seems to be one of the big ones that's associated with pain and helping people get rid of addiction, but there's many other ones. But nonetheless, so I decided to talk about a case. And this was a young woman that came to the office here. I have been seeing her for many things over the years. But she came in for a very specific reason. And she really was my first case with this issue. So unfortunately, she had accidentally, you know, been leaning on a door talking to a friend. And somehow the big metal door fell, and it actually amputated her index finger. I mean, that's incredible. You can imagine the pain of
Ouch.
Having your finger amputated. You know, I've gotten it caught in a door once, car door, and smashed it, but this was a complete amputation. Nonetheless, she went to the surgeon. She had to, you know, save the finger and ice and went back to the surgeon and who reattached it and thus started many months of, you know, after healing of physical therapy and to try to gain use of that finger. But as part of the treatment was the prescription of oxycodone. And so unfortunately for her is she became addicted. And a year later after this injury, she's came to see me and said, you know, unfortunately, I don't want to talk about this. I'm embarrassed. But, you know, it's a safe space in your office, Dr. Z. This is the truth. I'm addicted to this pain killer, this opioid. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty sad. And she still had pain. That was the whole thing. She still had this, like, phantom, well, it wasn't a phantom pain, but she still had this what they call neuropathic pain, like a neurological pain, feeling as if the nerve was still regenerating. And most likely it was because, you know, nerves take a while to heal. So I told her, you know what, I was just reading this herbal textbook, which is one of the most important, I think, textbooks in herbal medicine that's ever been written. This is Principles and Practice of Phytotherapy by the British herbalist Mills, and of course the Australian herbalist Kerry Bone, and these are very interesting professional herbalists that are certified and actually have their masters in herbalism, as which they give out in the UK. Really amazing professors of herbal medicine wrote this excellent textbook, which I had been using to teach my class, and I came upon a citation that many herbal plants, particularly with certain alkaloids, which are these bitter things that are very important for medicine, you know, alkaloids end in an I-N-E, you have caffeine, morphine, berberine, atropine, scopolamine, anything that ends in an I-N-E. Well, it turns out morphine, ends in I-N-E, too, and it's also an alkaloid. So, and it was derived from the California poppy plant. So I was like, okay, so I guess if I flood the patient's body with California poppy, maybe it will act to bind to the receptors, these opioid receptors, because the old literature used to say that California poppy had morphine in it, had these opioids in it, but that's been since discredited. More likely, they have what they call competitive antagonism to these receptors, which means they kind of compete. So if you flood the receptors, it's like Velcro. If the Velcro gets all sticky full of dust and dust bunnies, it can't stick. It can't stick. You have to pull all those things off. So it's like if you flood the receptors with this, with these herbal alkaloids, the opioid receptors will grab hold of them. They'll think it's the opium, but it's not. And over time, this will start to reduce the craving. Well, you know, this was done in animals. It really wasn't done in humans. So I asked the woman if she'd be a guinea pig, and she agreed. So I gave her a very high dose of the extract, Dr. Kamara. I gave her teaspoons and teaspoons of the tincture. Every hour she took basically a teaspoon, every waking hour. So she was taking the equivalent of maybe 30 grams of the herbs, which is a very
high dose.
Well,
that's, of course, you know, that's an amount that I would not suggest people try unless they are under the consultation of someone like yourself who's an expert in herbal medicine, because certainly the literature doesn't recommend that kind of dose. But I understand what you're trying to do. Now, did she get sleepy? Because it is also a mild relaxant.
Yes. She definitely felt tired.
So she couldn't really be driving then.
But she felt tired anyway from being strung out from the OxyContin, you know, because she was taking pretty high doses of that, you know, probably illicitly, because she had to find these pills otherwise once her prescription ran out. But, you know, whatever. We, you know, tend not to critique our patients for these types of things and try to create a safe space for them to tell their story. Nonetheless, after a month of this protocol, she was completely free of the OxyContin addiction. And the California poppy, by the way, was really helping her with the pain. And I also added some Jamaican dogwood. And I added also another interesting plant, which is called Indian pipe, which I learned about from David Winston. Indian pipe, they call that the ghost plant or the cork
plant. What an interesting plant to find in the field, Dr. Z. I wonder if any of our listeners, you can Facebook us at Natural Nurse, or just send us an email. I'd love to hear from you. What a dynamite plant that is. You'll find it in the woods. And it pops up, and it really does look like a ghost pipe. You can see through it.
Yes, it's very interesting. And again, no real modern-day studies, but when you look at one of my Dr. Nate Pensley is a naturopathic physician, Nathaniel Petley up in New Hampshire now. He wrote his thesis on the corpse plant. He had herbal training before he went through the naturopathic program, and was very interested when we were lecturing on this particular plant and wanted to research it. While he didn't find a lot of old clinical trials, he went through a lot of the older literature and looked at many of the case studies, and he looked at the chemistry of the plant and extrapolated it with other plants that have similar chemistry, and wrote an amazing thesis on this particular plant. But the famous herbalist, our colleague and friend David Winston, who we've had on the program many times, he wrote about it extensively in a lot of his memoirs. He said that the ghost plant, the corpse plant, Monotropa it's called, is the Latin, when you take it, you still feel the pain, but it distances you from the pain. So they call it a pain-relief distancer, very similar to the effect of breathing nitric oxide for pain and some of the anesthesias, where I remember my son getting his tooth worked on as a kid, and the dentist was giving him nitric oxide, and the dentist said, okay, you're going to start feeling funny. And when he was done, my son said, when he started breathing the nitric oxide, it's almost as if like he drifted into like another dimension where he could hear the dentist working, and he was kind of aware of his surroundings, but he didn't really care because he said it was like jumping on one of those floaty toys, Dad, you know, those bouncy houses. I felt like, so anyway, that's kind of the interesting sensation, I guess, of the monotropa, a pain distancer. Have you ever heard about that, Dr. Kamai?
Well, I have, you know, I have experienced that, right, where you're still feeling it. It's not that it's numb, but you don't care.
Exactly, exactly. If anyone is a Inspector Clouseau fan, a Pink Panther fan, some of the old Pink Panthers with Peter Sellers, there was a thing where they were breathing nitric oxide and pulling each other's teeth out and laughing about it, and like they didn't really care. It reminded me of that funny episode there. So you combine that with the California poppy. This is often combined with the California poppy, usually like equal parts. And then you add the Jamaican dogwood, like we discussed before. Now, there's also a close cousin to Jamaican dogwood, which we call high tongue pea, H-A-I, then T-O-N-G, then P-I, high tongue pea. And it's also called by the curanderos, the herb doctors in South America, it's called malunga. And this is a very powerful pain plant that not a lot of people know about. It's in the Fabaceae, the pea family, but it forms this giant tree. They call it the coral tree. I'm sure it grows in your neck of the woods in Florida, Dr. Kamai, because it is a very tropical tree. But this has been shown to be a very powerful pain distancer, because one of the ways that you can modulate pain is to work with some of these nerve neurotransmitters, which allows the pain message to go from one nerve to the other, from like the distal area, which is like where your hand, say, touches the flame, and then the information goes up, it goes to your spinal nerves, but then it has to jump up into the central nervous system, and then the pain has to be perceived by the brain. Well, that requires various neurotransmitters to arc that message over up and up into your brain, for then you actually feel the pain, so to speak. So it turns out that the erythrina, which is the Latin for the high tongue pea, malunga, interferes with that pathway very well. And so you have different types of pain. You have sharp pain and dull pain, which are, different types of neurotransmitters are involved in that and different types of pathways. But nonetheless, the erythrina or the high tongue pea could be added to that formula of the Jamaican dogwood and the California poppy and the corpse plant to make an amazing alternative to opioids. Herbal medicine never ceases to amaze me. I mean, opium is
me
a plant, too.
Now, while we're there, so, you know, let's take a little break now. I think he got the natural medicine
chest up
and running. So let's play that, and when we come back, we'll just reintroduce ourselves and continue this fascinating discussion, because it sounds like if it was successful, it should be something that, you know, other providers try for, you know, the vast number of patients that are struggling with opioid addiction.
That's
so
why
we
I
can do
the
natural
paper.
Medicine chest now, engineer, if you're ready, and we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the folklore, history, chemistry, and medicinal applications of the common kitchen herb, thyme.
common culinary spice known botanically as Thymus vulgaris is only one member of a large genera which includes over 400 species and even more varieties. The Thymus genera is originally native to the Mediterranean region and is a perennial plant which grows wild in usually dry, sandy soil, green heaths, and grasslands. Thyme is a prolific, fragrant, creeping ground cover and often displays an attractive spray of flowering branchlets spanning the spectrum from white to violet.
There is considerable debate amongst historians as to the origin of the name thyme. Some believe it to be from the Greek thymen, meaning to fumigate or to burn a sacrifice, because it was used as a sweet-smelling incense and also to keep pests and venomous creatures away from the Greek home. Others believe it came from the Greek thumos, meaning courage or energy, perhaps because it has a reputation of being used by Greek warriors for courage and was bathed in and used as a beverage for invigoration. The Egyptians used an herb called tham, which we believe is Thymus vulgaris, to mummify their dead. The principal chemical constituents of thyme are the volatile oils consisting of phenol, thymol, and carvacrol. A 1977 article in the scientific journal Chemical Abstracts revealed that thymol's antimicrobial activity is 18 times more powerful than phenol. Phenol is a major antiseptic used in commercial germicidal cleaners like Lysol. Thymol is one of the most potent antimicrobial substances known and far surpasses even the strongest antibiotics. It has been illustrated in the Journal of Chemistry and in the Merck Index of Drugs and Chemicals to destroy parasites, worms, fungi, bacteria, mosquito larvae, and many viruses.
The pharmaceutical and cosmetic industry is privy to the important medicinal effects of oil of Thymus vulgaris. It is ubiquitously found in gargles, cough drops, vapor rubs, and many mouthwashes. Oil of thyme is to be used, albeit very sparingly because of its potency, as a gargle or mouthwash for sore throats and inflamed gums. Because the volatile oil is expelled via the lungs and kidneys, naturopathic physicians use it for upper respiratory infections and urinary tract infections. If you're in the midst of a cold and are lying in bed with too much thyme on your hands, try making a thyme tea made with just a few teaspoons of thyme to a cup of boiling water. It's an excellent diaphoretic because it causes the body to perspire profusely. Thyme also possesses an excellent carminative and antispasmodic effect, helping in poor digestion, flatulence, and intestinal gripe.
So, listeners, if you're feeling ill, thyme heals all wounds. Remember to reach for that thyme in a bottle the next time you open up the Natural Medicine Chest.
On time, Dr. Z, we should probably do a new one on California poppy.
That's great. So before the break, we were talking about, you know, pain and, of course, the study or the case studies, too. I had another case study of a woman who was put on low-dose naltrexone, which is a, you know, kind of a low-dose opioid for pain. And she, too, became addicted to that. And it really wasn't helping her too much with the pain. And similar to the other case, with the naltrexone, we weaned her off of the naltrexone using the California poppy. This was she didn't really have the severe neuropathic pain, so the dose was a little less, but nonetheless, she found that the California poppy was more effective than the naltrexone for her chronic pain, and at the same time, it got her off of the prescription medication. So those were two. I've had other interesting cases, too, of pain where the herbs were more effective than the medications. But really, I haven't really had much more experience with weaning people off of opioids. It's not really my clinical focus, but nonetheless, it was just interesting to see that it could be done with herbs. And I wish it was maybe done. I found when I was doing the research that there's a herbalist out in San Francisco that has successfully done this. She calls it kick juice. And she, California poppy is a main part of the ingredient of this particular substances that she uses. I guess it's a tincture that she uses to help people with acupuncture and other means to get them free of opioids. So it turns out that, you know, as usually reported in the mainstream media, you're not really hearing about these types of things unless you really dig.
No, not at all. So how? So what was the outcome with that person who put on high dose?
Well, the pain. You mean the woman with the finger? Well, she was
correct. Yes,
completely. She was completely cured of the pain, and she eventually got off the California poppy too. Once her nerves. See, once I started working with her, I started to prescribe things like Hypericum oil, which she would rub into her finger, again, with an attempt to try to help with some of the pain. But once, really the big stumbling block was to get her off the opioids. And we used other things for pain. You know, good nutrition, minerals are very important for pain. They're not numbing like anesthetic, but of course, if you don't have enough copper in your body, you can't synthesize and fix your cartilage. So copper deficiency can lead to all kinds of problems with pain. And of course, magnesium is very important for, you know, forming bones and muscles and regrowing the tendons and ligaments and things like that. And I've had a lot of experience since then. The other part of my discussion, my next thing that we're going to publish, is I'm going to actually write up some of our cases that we actually presented for our webinar on the use of some of the Chinese herbs for my injuries and pain as further cases of using herbs for pain. So not really opioid addiction, but just I'm going to continue to write up cases, again, for my class, but I'm going to publish them. So maybe we'll collaborate. Well, we have collaborated on some of these cases that we presented for the our herbal webinars. You know, like when I tore my knee up, when I broke my hand in martial arts. And that's the name of my talk that I'm doing up at Burlington for the American Association of Restorative Medicine. This is a big conference that I'm lecturing at the end of September, and it's called Confessions of an Aging Martial Artist.
Wow, what a great name, Dr. Yeah. Z. And what did you come up with for that? Please send me your slides.
I'll send you the whole thing, because what I did is I combined a lot of our stuff that we talked about with
Wait a minute, too. What do you mean aging? Of course, we've been partners, actually, on paper. You know, we are 50-50% partners in Natural Alternatives Health Education and Multimedia Services. And I think we just reached our 31st year of that, Dr. Z. 31st year. Because it's like, what does he mean aging? He's just a kid. I just met him. Well, that was before marriage, before my children are grown adults. Your children are almost grown adults. It's quite amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, the key is to try to stay young and active. And I think if you really have a good understanding of supplements for pain, You can do that, because it turns out, and I think you found this statistic and put it as the first slide in our pain presentation, that the biggest concern with aging baby boomers is not, you know, digestive problems and things like that, which of course are all important, but it's pain. Most of them have some type of musculoskeletal pain. And most of them take Tylenol and take aspirin and do other pain things, and that's why they could become addicted to oxycodone and things like that, because physicians really aren't trained in that there are natural supplements for pain. So that's why we wrote this book, Supplements for Pain, Natural Help for Arthritis, Fibromyalgia, and Other Inflammatory Conditions. And we talk about some of the very interesting research. Like, there's some amino acids, like phenylalanine, for instance, which are very important, that directly bind to the opioid receptors. These are naturally occurring amino acids that, you know, you can find anywhere. But they seem to really help us with our what's called endogenous opioids. You know, now the big focus on research is looking at the endogenous cannabinoid system and pain management. That's why so many people are starting to use cannabis products for pain. And that also seems to bind to the endogenous opioids, you know, because the cannabinoids will impact. Actually, tonight I'm actually taking an online seminar on updating my knowledge on the endogenous cannabinoid system. So I'm looking forward to joining that seminar at 5 o'clock. It's online today.
Where is that? Maybe I'll do that too.
Yeah, I'll send you the information and you can join in if you're free. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm actually looking. Many of my patients and clients are asking me about which CBD oil is best. There's so much on the market and a lot of it is garbage.
Well,
so
we've had
Dr.
Blair on the show. You know, Philip Blair, and we've had him on the show several times.
That was years ago, right?
Yeah, and I know, you know, those are good products. But, you know, it goes back to even ancient tradition. Many years ago, when I twisted my ankle in Jamaica on one of our trips, the bush doctor, Jamba, made a poultice of ganja along with the Jamaican dogwood and wrapped it around my ankle. He also added cloves and allspice, which, you know, we know for pumpkin pies, but we don't realize that these are major herbs for pain. Every Chinese formula that's for pain has a little bit of either cinnamon or cloves or ginger as a driver. So these aromatic spices are also excellent for pain. And by the way, I found a reference, Dr. Kamai, of these Australian nurse practitioners. I'll have to send it to you. That did a study showing that just taking a piece of ginger and juicing it in even a hand juicer, you put in a garlic press, and mixing that juice and rubbing it on your knee was more effective than all these different pain things for the pain of arthritis. So Mother Nature has given us so many things for pain without getting addicted to oxycodone and these prescription drugs.
It's just so amazing that it's not more widespread. I mean, using those drugs are great, you know, for short term in an emergency to stop severe pain. But other than that, it is the wrong way to go.
Absolutely. And so that's why, you know, there's programs like ours and our book and other things where patients can hopefully learn some of these alternatives. And a lot of the progressive doctors that attend these, you know, holistic conferences will learn quite a bit from attending my workshop on pain. That's the name of my workshop, you know, Confessions of an Aging Martial Artist, Natural Therapies for Pain. So because an injury, because I've had so many injuries that I would be on prescription drugs, I'm sure, from being a rugby player in college, football player playing in high school and in college, and then, of course, being a black belt in both jujitsu and tang soo do, I regularly get beat up and fight people half my age. But I'm able to manage pain and injury through the use of these natural medicines. So I'm really excited to present this information.
It's really so helpful. And you fell off a horse, too, right?
You told me, I remember, your introduction to natural medicine was when you fell off a horse and needed some alternative. So we both have introductions into natural medicine through pain management. Have a great day. Bye-bye.